So I think where it's important to start is on the last, I think the last podcast I was on, the provincial election one, I made a comment about the precarious nature of my employment with ARPA Canada, and how my appearance on the podcast may jeopardize that. So I think it's important that we start with an update for our supporters out there. Colin, can you confirm that I'm still.
Surprisingly, Paul is still here. I mean, we can all see you right now, so that's a good indicator, I think,
Still
of your
gainfully
status. Yep.
good, still gainfully employed by
He
ARPA Canada.
successfully made it through that
Yeah.
podcast and the
All right.
response to it from supporters, from the media, from politicians, and from everyone. So, well done.
Okay. Okay. I think it's good just to start with that off the top.
Make sure we're good to go. Okay, so we're into week four here of the election, which is kind of crazy how quickly that goes. Obviously, there's a couple weeks yet to go. Polling right now, I had some of the polling printouts here from the last week. Everybody keeps talking about that there might be some sort of turnaround, and inflated numbers, all this kind of thing. But what I'm seeing is we've still got a very strong liberal showing, at least from the polling numbers here. Today's printout shows 190 seats if the vote was to happen today, 172 seats for a majority, seat projections here, so 124 conservatives. That's a pretty strong majority for the liberals right now.
Yeah, I'm seeing 192, I think. Yep.
192. So,
Depending
I
where you're
mean,
looking.
again, those are numbers they're grabbing from polling across the country. So when you go down to the riding by riding level, it's obviously a little less clear. So there's a lot of speculation in terms of what those exact seat projection numbers are looking
Sure.
like. But interestingly, the response from the other side, or from people I've been hearing, has been that while these polling numbers
Don't
aren't
believe your lying
actually,
eyes.
yeah,
Don't believe your
they're
lying
not,
eyes, Colin.
the numbers aren't reflecting what's actually happening on the ground. Now, maybe there's some validity to that, people knocking on doors, taking down
Sure.
names, taking down sort of where they stand on different issues. And it seems like this, it seems like to them, at least to some of the candidates and that sort of thing, that these numbers aren't lining up. But I don't know, what's your
Sure.
perspective on that?
I mean, and certainly, are polls completely accurate? No, of course not. Are they perhaps even, is it more challenging today to conduct an accurate poll than it was in years past? I think that would also seem to be the case, right? If there's an over-reliance on home phone numbers, and calling during the evening and that kind of thing, it's going to skew to certain demographics. I'm sure that's true. However, I don't. I think that's an exercise in what the kids would call cope, Colin. I think right these that this the same people who are saying don't believe the polls today were overjoyed at polls 3 months ago, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, right? So they may or may not be accurate. And you certainly, if you're a conservative supporter, Conservative Party of Canada, you don't want anything that might depress the vote. Right, so you want your voting base to be encouraged, but I don't think we have any reason to believe that there's a systemic skewing of the polls in favor of the Liberal Party. Right? So it's I mean we'll of course we'll see, but it doesn't I'm not sure everybody who's today arguing that the polls can't be trusted are doing so in good faith. I think that's an exercise in sort of arguing for their own side, which I suppose in politics is fair, but I'm not sure everybody believes exactly what they're saying right now.
Yeah, I mean, it is, like you say, it is a bit of a guessing science to some degree. But looking at the numbers, the reality is, for the Liberal Party, the collapse of the NDP is kind of the story on that side. It's not
Sure.
so much, it's not so much even what the Conservatives are or aren't doing, or what some of the other parties are or aren't doing, as much as it is the New Democrats have not been showing up. And I mean, even looking at this chart, the odds of election outcome, it's like they've plateaued right to the bottom. And even a couple of weeks ago, there was that little uptick where there might have been some hope for the conservative turning around. That blip seems to have flattened out, and the numbers are staying relatively, surprisingly steady. So anyway, I'm not
And
sure if
I think
there's too
there's and
much.
it, yeah and I don't know. I mean this is not we're not prognosticator. I mean we're
No.
not really horse race politics guys necessarily, but there's a question there too whether that represents a historically poor performance by the NDP in terms of their leader, in terms of their quality of candidates, or if it represents more strategic voting among the non-conservative supporters, right? Whether liberal and NDP supporters are actually being more strategic in their voting, right? That's the it's one or the other. I do think it's possible that in some, in stronger NDP areas that those voters are just, I think especially in Ontario, where the anti Premier Ford sentiment bleeds over into federal politics, that a lot of those NDP supporters are choosing to vote liberal in order to not have a conservative government. It's
Although,
probably a little from
ironically,
column A, a little from column B.
I know this is something we were going to talk about later, but Doug Ford fired a shot at Pierre this week, in terms of the fact that he basically was saying that Pierre, gave up a lead and that that was a criminal thing that he should have had. If he had Ford's campaign manager, he would have successfully been able to turn that poll lead that he had so many months ago into a win today. Now, obviously, anybody can say that. They can speculate just as much as we are today. But that's the interesting things that are playing into the race right now. So, looking at some of those news items, I think the reality has been that on some of the issues that we're concerned about, there has been some movement. During the Ontario election, the interesting thing was, or the uninteresting thing was, that there were almost no comments made about the issues of key the key issues of focus that we had raised. But here in the federal election, there's been a couple of things. So, but maybe before we get there, I'd like to just comment on our federal election guide, which is on the website. This is a shameless plug for our resource, but it's a two-sided document that you can print off at home and contains all of the information, the policy platforms on our six key issues that we're looking at this election. So, euthanasia, abortion, free speech and hate speech, conversion therapy and gender ideology, prostitution and pornography. Takes a look at each of those and sort of presents the party stance on each of these items. So, for instance, actually this has to be updated now because the Green Party, which is another item of news, but the Green Party came out in support of the United Nations report on the Canadian situation on assisted suicide, and basically said they support the UN's recommendations in terms of the fact that essentially Canada's euthanasia policy is too broad and has serious concerns. So, but anyway, all that to say, there's a number of things here. You've got the Green position, the NDP position, also supporting the canceling of expansion of euthanasia to those with mental illness, right? You remember Bill C-314, which was Ed Fast's bill. And then you've got the Liberal position, which is eight MPs supported that bill, but 136 opposed it, which ultimately led to its failing. So anyway, there's all of those party positions: Green, NDP, Liberal, Conservative, CHP, People's Party. We've got them all there. So make sure you take a look at that.
And it's also, by the way, Colin, if you're under 60 and so you don't have a printer at home, it's mobile friendly as well. I know you have a printout there you're holding up for the camera, but if you show up to an event to meet a candidate, you can pull it up on your phone. You can get talking points, sample questions. You can do that kind of easily, right on the spot.
So, Paul, maybe let's talk about some of the things, some of the news items that have happened in the last couple of weeks. What's stuck out for you just over the weekend?
Well, and can we, yeah, if we could take up May, because you mentioned, of course, the Green Party agreeing with that UN report, and I think, in terms of issues that, as ARPA Canada, we're most concerned about, and our supporters, we trust, are most concerned about as well. It's kind of a, I've got good news for you, and I got bad news for you, Colin, right? The good news is, we actually struggle usually in an election period, whether it's provincial or federal, to get these issues like abortion, euthanasia, childhood gender transition, those three in particular. We struggled to get those as part of the conversation, certainly as part of the national conversation. We struggle really to get it in anywhere. That's part of our encouragement to supporters, is to say, hey, can you make this part of the conversation? So the good news is, those things are part of the conversation. Like as of today, all three of them are. They're part of the national conversation. There are national headlines from party leaders on each of those. The bad news is none of them are saying anything good, with the exception, like you mentioned, as the of the Green Party. So on euthanasia, for example, Colin Pierre Poilievre recently at a rally was asked about his stance on MAID, on medical assistance in dying, and then I think, and the question included specifically, any changes to the laws that exist now, and would that include advanced care directives? And his answer, this is not a direct quote, but I trust a fair one, was people will continue to have the right to make that choice for themselves. And then he pivoted to the fact that, hey, we need better health care, and we're going to accomplish that by licensing 20,000 immigrant doctors and 32,000 immigrant nurses with a certain Blue Seal program, et cetera, expedite
It was a clear attempt to
their
pivot.
licensing. Correct. And there is, and that's, pivoting politics. If politicians can't pivot, what else can they do, right? There's a certain amount of pivoting when you receive a question that's fair. That's part of the game. We understand that. And there is a natural connection there. Obviously, there is a natural connection between euthanasia and healthcare. Of course, there is. And there was an opportunity there. There was an opportunity there if he had simply reiterated the party stance, his previously stated stance, and the party stance being against advanced care directives, even going as so far as to say, as the Conservative Party handbook, I think, has said, that they're against euthanasia in principle. If he had made a strong statement like that and then pivoted to, and by the way, let's have support for people seeking euthanasia for pain, for illness, for loneliness, for depression, for all these things. What we need is a better healthcare system that provides support for these people so that they don't seek that avenue. That's a perfectly fair, that falls short of kind of a truly just and equitable, righteous position, Colin. But it's that's at least a reasonable pivot, and I think something that we would have commended to some degree. But that's not what he did at all. He said people will continue to have the right to make the choice for themselves, and I think the only way we can take that is the government will continue to provide euthanasia in all the circumstances that it's currently legal. And so there's also no mention of, in terms of the track two, the sunset clause, that kind of thing. So it was really a failed opportunity to reiterate the importance of life, to reiterate even his own previous comments, his own party's stance. And then make a kind of more meaningful connection to healthcare.
I
So
think that's
really,
the
call
surprising
it
thing about it.
disappointing is, yeah.
Like you said, it was an opportunity, but the surprising thing is that it shouldn't have been as difficult as he seemed to have made it for himself. Like it seemed like he
Yeah.
was trying to avoid something that in the past the party's actually been relatively clear on. I
Right.
already mentioned Bill C-314, which was a bill by Ed Fast to seek to entirely roll back the mental health provision that for now, it's still wide open. If we have a Liberal majority government in the next 4 years, the reality is by 2027, we could actually have euthanasia for those with mental illness. And so I mean, again, that was something that we had celebrated at the time. I think others had celebrated at the time as a win. But the reality is it just pushed it off for a period. But the Conservatives were behind a big part of, or at least supported the push that was there to end euthanasia for mental illness. They've been clear in terms of conscience rights for doctors. That's in their party platform. They've talked about several other things. Advanced care directives is maybe the one place where we've seen them being a little bit unclear, which is odd that that would be the one thing he mentioned, but they're unclear on it, I think partially because their Quebec caucus seems to be in support of advanced care directives, where the entire rest of caucus, or the vast majority of them anyway, seem to be concerned about euthanasia and its expansion. So to me, this is a solid, easy policy platform statement to respond to, that he's not going to get a lot of pushback from. It's not something that news media are really trying to catch him on, right?
That's right. And the previous position of the party is already baked in the cake. So whether, hopefully there'll be some journalists that are able to follow up, whether does that represent actually a change in policy? You know, was there a change in policy that he was articulating or he made up on the spot? Or was that merely a mishandled question? Mm-hmm. I think that's an open question that we need him to be pressed on.
Yeah, and we're working on a press release that I guess by the time this podcast is released, that press release will have gone out, but engaging with that exact question to sort of ensure that the media is asking that question. Now, connected to that then, maybe pivoting to the other party that's in the sort of leading in the runnings anyway right now, the Prime Minister obviously made a comment on the weekend or a little while ago about the fact that in relation to sex change surgery for minors, that he would continue to allow it. So he made the remarks. It was a question specific to whether or not he would do something similar to what is being done in Alberta when it comes to the issue of gender identity and specifically to sex change drugs and things like that. And he said, Canada is a mosaic. People can be who they are. They can love who they love. Access to healthcare in Canada is not a business. It's a fundamental right, and we will defend it for all Canadians without exception. So there was more to the quote than that, but it's pretty clear from his statements that he's planning to support sex change surgery for minors. Now, the weird thing about this, and this is what, to that point, where we already released a press release earlier today responding to that exact statement, saying the reality is this is not, sex change surgery for minors is not something you can claim is a fundamental right for Canadians. So it's kind of a weird thing to say. It's a weird way to respond. Maybe it's something that, again, even just like with Pierre, it kind of maybe caught him flat-footed a little bit, and he wasn't quite sure how to respond or didn't have the right talking point document in front of him. Who knows? But that's a concerning development anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think, excuse me, the difference there between Polyev's comment and this one is this comment seems to be entirely in line with the Liberal Party's previous comments and their platform, right? I think progressives recognize that if you include something that in our country, if you include something under the banner of healthcare, it's going to find widespread support, right? National healthcare is, for better or worse, part of the Canadian identity, and so if you include something under that umbrella, it's going to find support. So, even just the wording, right, that it's fundamentally important that the federal government is the defender of those rights, right, referring to the rights of people that can be who they are. So the and implied there is it's a right of a male to identify as a female, and therefore it necessarily follows, right, in their syllogism, that it's therefore the right of even a minor to undergo treatment, even up to gender reassignment surgery, right? So there's a kind of syllogism here that's internally consistent with their own policies. But if we take a step back for a moment and just say, well, what about the rights of children to informed consent, right? Or the rights of children to be protected from making decisions that have irreversible lifetime consequences, right? These kinds of questions are not new to our supporters, Colin, but there's just like to say the average person on the street, like, don't you think you should be able to buy a pack of smokes before you can undergo life-changing irreversible surgery? Isn't there a logic to that? So when you kind of pull these the talk about healthcare and about rights, when you sort of pull those apart a bit, and say, sure, but what about the rights of children to be protected from the consequences of these decisions that often, not always, but often they regret later in life.
Now, to his credit, I suppose, Pierre has been saying, or seems to be willing to stand on some of the statements when it comes to gender identity that he's made previously.
Yes.
But I think it's important to note as well, and we have some of this in the document as well, that I mentioned earlier, the Federal Election Guide, with the parties in it, that you've got clear statements from the CHP and from the PPC on this issue. The CHP opposes abusive conversion therapy and supports biblical body-affirming counseling, opposed to Bill C-6 and Bill C-4. Those are going back to the original legislation that was passed during the Liberals' time in the last couple of years, which basically, in the document itself, in the bill itself, it actually talked about that biblical understandings of sexuality were myths. And that's quite a move. I mean, at least up until this point, the government, in its wording and even in the Constitution, it references still that the sovereignty of God. At least it has a nod to those historical things, even if it doesn't uphold them in reality. But yet here there was a document that specifically said and declared that these biblical understandings of sexuality and gender were myths. So the CHP obviously has taken a clear stand on that, as has the People's Party, who have promised to repeal Bill C-4 as well, and also looking to engage with some of the concerns around gender identity and gender expression in the Human Rights Act and elsewhere. So important to note those things. Again, the guide has a full plethora of responses from each of the parties' platforms to these issues. The last one we want to touch on, though, before we end here, Paul, is the comments Pierre has made on the issue of abortion, more specifically, over the weekend. So that was in St. Catharines. He was there over the weekend, and he was asked a direct question about it. Now, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. That was the one that I didn't print off here. I don't know if you have it, some of the statements that he made there over the weekend. But basically just, I mean, to some degree, this isn't a surprise. It's not a surprise for us for him to say something about abortion that basically says, I support a woman's right to choose. But I think the more concerning statement was the one where he effectively said that the Conservative Party has not and never will tolerate or allow a bill on limiting abortion to pass or to be successful in the House. That's a bit of a new thing, and it's interesting because some of the Conservative Party policy, sorry, their party statements, like some of the policy statements that they've had at conventions and things like that, actually say conflicting things. From the one side, they're talking about the fact that they are very opposed to certain things. Like, I think sex selective abortion is one of them, that the party's opposed to sex selective abortion, and yet publicly they're making statements that they would never tolerate change to abortion legislation, even though Canada is a country that has no abortion legislation at all. So it's a bit of a weird situation to be in, weird position for him to be in, to be playing that game. But again, it's a bit of an unfortunate reality when responding to media questions, and the goal is to kind of just get out of the room as quickly as possible, that there is no real depth behind the response to an issue like this.
And who is it playing to, Colin, right? His quote, I have the quote here, there will be no laws or other restrictions imposed on a woman's right to decide what to do with her body as she wishes. Now, as written, that's okay, that's one thing, but we know that he's referring, of course, to abortion, and so we're talking about more than just a woman's body, right? We're talking also about the life of a preborn child. And the question is, in a country that sees, I in the last year, I saw more than 100,000 lives lost to abortion. I live in a city, Colin, of about 100,000 people, so about the population of my city every year is lost to abortion. In a country where that's the case, in a country that's the only democratic one without any laws governing abortion whatsoever, And where there is a plurality of Canadians that would support, for example, legislation against sex selective abortion, would support legislation against late term abortion, who is this leader in this party playing to, and to what advantage, to continue to tack not just to the center, but really to the far left on this issue. I don't know whether it's the case that they just assume the pro-life vote will always go to them for the fear that the Liberal Party would be worse, whether they don't feel any pressure, whether they don't feel any pressure from pro-life MPs and candidates within their own party on that. But you have to wonder, when it's that extreme of a stance that there will be no laws. You have to wonder, you look at that extreme position and you look at the polling, to what end are they sticking to this extreme position? To what benefit? To what gain? Even from politically speaking.
Yeah, and I wonder if this sort of brings us full circle back to the polling question. And it's interesting that the reality is a big chunk of sort of the baby boomer population, the 60, 65 plus, is seems to be voting or at least leaning liberal this election. So maybe that's part of this equation that, we're talking about a generation that lived through some of the public debates around abortion, have been told their entire life, it's a woman's body, it's a woman's right to choose. That supporter base, that base for the party is, I think, part of what Pierre is going after right now. He's trying to target those people who, I think they're assuming that somebody like Carney is a bit of a moderate. He's sort of the centrist, maybe less left, if you want to say it that way, than Prime Minister Trudeau was. Now, I don't think that's true, but I think that's the assumption that's being made from him. And so I think Pierre's going after some of that voter base because it's a large voter
Sure.
base. Baby boomers, it's a large demographic.
Sure.
It's a demographic that you can expect to go out and vote, where I think the younger generations tend to be more flighty. There's
Less
less
reliable.
likelihood
Yeah.
for them to get out and actually vote. So I think that's got to play a factor here in who
Sure.
the candidates are speaking to.
Sure. And what I mean, and what evidence is the is there that it works, Colin, that it's going to work, right? If you see the responses from pro-abortion groups, even since in the couple of days since Poilievre's comments, the public statements were, "We don't believe him."
Yeah.
They can say whatever they want. This is a paraphrase, of course. I'm not reading this verbatim. They say conservatives can say whatever they want. We really know they're fascists in disguise. They want to re regulate what women can do with their bodies, et cetera, et cetera. We don't believe them. You couldn't make a more unequivocal statement than there will be no laws or other restrictions imposed. And yet, and it doesn't work. They're not believed. And so an open question is, so are pro-life voters going to punish the Conservative Party for taking that stance, right? For taking it so boldly, right? Is it going to be the case that it doesn't work to win that moderate, baby boomer generation cohort that you mentioned, Colin, and are they going to pay a price for it in terms of the social conservative base, in terms of the pro-life base? That's an open question, and I think it'll be a while after the election before that kind of detailed level of polling is found. But I think that's a key question in this election.
All right, we've gone on longer than I think most of the other podcasts have gone to this point. We didn't even get to Carney's the whole gaffe around the pins that apparently some of his staffers were involved in planting Trump-like pins at a conservative rally or something like
Don't know.
that.
I'm a big pin guy.
Anyway,
Send whatever pins you want. I don't know. All's fair and whatever. Make up some fake
love and
phony
war in
pins.
elections.
Send them out. Yeah,
There
sure.
you go. All right. Well, thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you.